Quality News Network. After yesterday's gains, Wall Street did a quick backflip today, plunging 360 points as investors came to grips with no more interest rate cuts, a slowing economy, and the unrelenting rise in oil prices. We'll have the numbers coming up. A number of sources are reporting that violent civilian and military troop deaths have fallen and are continuing to fall in Iraq. Sources attribute the drop to the troop surge, along with Muqtada al-Sadr's halting his army's operations and some Western tribes abandoning al-Qaeda. During a speech at the Heritage Foundation, President Bush said that, quote, unfortunately, on too many issues, some in Congress are behaving as if America is not at war, end quote. He likened Congress' inaction of White House anti-terror measures to the days leading up to Hitler's march across Europe and Lenin's establishment of a communist Russia. He added, quote, history teaches us that underestimating the words of evil, ambitious men is a terrible mistake, end quote. The U.S. Senate passed another expanded version of the children's health care bill that the president has already vowed to veto. Congress tried to override the president's veto of a similar bill last week, but couldn't get enough votes to do so. The White House is standing pat in its assertion that the expanded SCHIP bill is another step by the Democrats toward national health. Thousands of students were dispersed with tear gas and water cannons in Caracas, Venezuela today. They were protesting against the reforms being instituted by President Hugo Chavez, one of them being the abolishment of term limits, effectively allowing him to run for re-election indefinitely. The U.S. Marshal's Office announced its four-month Operation Falcon Sweep of fugitives resulted in the arrest of 6,400 lawbreakers in 22 states. Apprehended were gang members, sex offenders, and others accused of violent crimes. The pilot of the B-29 bomber that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima has passed away from a number of ailments. Brigadier General Paul Tibbetts, who requested that there be no funeral or headstone, fearing that it would give his detractors a place to protest, was just 92 years old. All but one of the 23 wildfires scorching Southern California have been 100% contained, but a red flag warning has been issued due to the onset of more Santa Ana wind conditions arriving by tomorrow. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business just ahead.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, we must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light. This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Poland's Jewish leaders are planning on building a glass skyscraper in the Warsaw Ghetto beside the neighborhood's only remaining synagogue. The community nearly wiped out in the Holocaust is thriving and gaining in financial support and residents. Missouri scientists have mapped the DNA of a cat for the first time, adding to the list of six mapped species. The breakthrough is valuable because cats share more than 200 diseases with humans. Some 5 million frozen pizzas have been recalled because the pepperoni atop Totino's and Gino's brands are contaminated with E. coli. Some of the pizzas are still in supermarket coolers, but others might already be at home in people's freezers. Consumers are being warned not to open a phony email message, purportedly from the fraud division of the Federal Trade Commission. The email contains an attachment with a virus that steals passwords and other data. Chrysler announced today they'll cut 4 models and 11,000 jobs. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow lost 362 points, closing at 13,567. The Nasdaq dropped 64 to close at 2794, and the S&P 500 fell 40 points to close at 1508. Oil has settled down to $93.49, losing $1.04. a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book Chapter and Verse 64 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, November the 1st, and if you're listening at approximately 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the East Coast, then you're indeed listening to a live show. If not, then you're listening to one of our archive programs, and you are welcome aboard also. The toll-free line for contacting the show is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877, the number 4, head-on. Or if you have unlimited long-distance plan, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck, and that's 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. It rings in West Virginia. I try to check email during the breaks. And the show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You're going to find links to all of the guests as well as the audio archives from the past show, as well as the chat room, which is active, and I'm there, and along with a number of other good horn folks. We call the radio network Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. You'll find links there to the Horn main site, where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the network. You'll find links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You know, at the top of the hour news, George Bush, what was he saying? He was addressing the Heritage Foundation and saying that, complaining that the Americans are not acting like we're at war. Well, I don't think that's true, George. I mean, we're all aware that there are only 54 more days of warfare on the war on Christmas. Before Christmas comes around, we only have 54 more days to stomp it out. We're fully aware the church has a war on Halloween. Churches everywhere are not calling it Halloween or All Hallows Eve anymore. They're calling it Spring Festival, or actually Fall Festival, or some sort of variant. There's the war on our nation's birthday, which we now refer to as July the 4th. We can no longer refer to that as Independence Day. God forbid that anyone should think we're independent. I think I heard that on Bob's show a while back. That impressed me very much, Bob, if that came from you. Yes, it's also true. But, you know, in thinking about that before the show started, that, you know, you're not acting like we're at war. You know, the families of the people who have died there, who have gone over believing that they were indeed doing the right thing for the country and standing up for what they believed to be a threat to this country, and the funerals and that son of a bitch has got the nerve to stand up in front of the Heritage Foundation and say, Americans are acting like they're not at war. Well, you piece of Texas trash. Oh, deliver me, Jesus. We're working on the November schedule. We have some interesting guests coming up in November. We'll have Dennis Dyson. He is with the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund and Leadership Institute. If you'll recall, the Gay and Lesbian Fund backs Democratic candidates in elections for the LGBT candidates in elections throughout the country. We recently had, a month or so ago, we had Jeff Anderson on, who was running for Duluth City Council. He was referred to us by the Victory Fund. We had Fred Mason, who was running for the Baltimore City Council, and he was referred to us by Victory Fund. And we've had Kevin Beckner, who is in Hillsborough County. All of these are LGBT folks. And he was on the show, and I thought it was time that we actually heard from the Victory Fund itself. And actually, he'll be on the show Monday, which is the eve, if you'll recall, November the 7th. So it was the eve of many elections. So he'll have some interesting perspectives to share with us. Also, later in the month, we have Stan Harrison scheduled. I'm looking forward to that. Stan is a New York-based rock and jazz saxophonist. Now, he's played with Duran Duran and David Bowie in a list of people much longer than my arm, a very impressive fellow. That's Stan Harrison, and he is also scheduled during the month of November. Tonight is a Just Us show. We'll be catching up on lots of news, and we have some audio clips, stories that we haven't been able to get to. At the bottom of the hour, around 9:30, during the 9:30 break, the studio will be calling Daryl. If you'll recall, Daryl was on the show with us a week or so ago, Daryl Russ. He's a singer-songwriter who has the range from disco to R&B. He was a great guest, but we covered so much of his personal life that we didn't get to all of his music. He'll be joining us shortly. Daryl Russ will be joining us shortly at the bottom of the hour to introduce a track that we did not get to when we were running him just a few weeks ago. When was that? That was October the 16th, if you'd like to go back and listen to that archive. Let's see. You know, Bob's been talking about adding video to this show. The more I think about it, I keep complaining about that, but the more I think about it, the better an idea it sounds. It would give you all a chuckle to see the mounds of paper that I surround myself with. It's just amazing. I so need an assistant. Waverly, Ohio. It's not known as a particularly dangerous place. It's a little town, about 6,000 people, maybe a little less. It's in the southern part of Ohio. It's your typical, whatever typical means, but it is, let's say, a typical Midwestern town. Struggled economically in recent years to keep things going, as so many smaller communities have. Waverly places a lot of pride in the Waverly High School football and basketball. Back in 2002, you'll all remember this. This was huge and played on all the main networks. The football team, they were playing. Waverly Tigers coach Derek DeWitt and the Northwest coach Dave France had talked before the game about putting in a fellow, his name was Jake Porter. Now, Jake was a Northwest senior who has a mental retardation but was very devoted and well-loved by the team, but was never allowed to play because he wasn't able to follow things. So what they did was, when the game was nearly over, Waverly was leading 42-0, so Coach DeWitt met with Coach Franz, and it was during a timeout, and they not only let Porter enter the game, but they allowed him to score a touchdown as well. Do you remember that a few years back, where the kid was running down the football field and made a touchdown and was so happy when at the end? So he entered the field, and they let him go into the huddle, and they snapped the ball, and Northwest handed it off to Porter, and then the team sort of moved away from they parted from the center of the field, and they allowed Porter to take off on his 49-yard dash down to the end zone. The crowd was cheering wildly. There wasn't a dry eye in the bleachers, and there wasn't a dry eye watching the television coverage of this either. Now, Waverly residents are also proud of the Emmett House. It's a historic hotel on Market Street. It's right next to the main highway. And Emmett House has been a Waverly landmark since 1861. But, of course, it, too, like the town, had fallen onto hard times. Recently, they had new owners, and it was refurbished in a grand scale. It was, a very fine restaurant, very fine pub. It rivals all the big old historic hotels in larger cities. The town is very, very proud of it. It was a lot more than just cleaning up the bricks. It was lovingly restored. Daniel Fetty, 39, worked at the Emmett House as a busboy. Now, Daniel was gay, and he was deaf. He was well-liked among his coworkers. He had fallen on some hard times. His apartment was destroyed in a fire. He lost everything. He was forced to live in his car, which he was parking close to the hotel where he worked. He was saving his meager earnings as a busboy and his small portion of a share of the tips to try to rent a new apartment. At 1 a.m., the police were called to investigate a fight near Market Street. The officer arrived and saw three men run behind a nearby building. He found Daniel in a trash bin. And Daniel had been stripped naked. He had been severely beaten with bricks and boards and bottles before he was thrown into the trash bin. The officer called an ambulance, and he was rushed to the Daniel Pike Community Hospital, and from there flown to Grant Hospital in Columbus, about 70 miles to the north. He died shortly after that. He died at 1 p.m. the next day. Within hours of the call, there were three suspects arrested. They were Martin Edward Baxter, 28, a Matthew Furman, 22, and a James Trent, 19. Those of you who listen to this show regularly realize that this age group is very typical for annihilation-type behavior toward LGBT folks. Not just killed, but annihilated. This age group seems to be particularly dangerous. Charges against Trent, they held those charges and were negotiating so he would have a plea bargain, you know, exchange for his testimony against the other two. The residents of the town and the officials, the police, the district attorney's office, the churches, everyone was shocked by how savage the murder was. It was the first seriously violent crime in that little town in 40 years. It's not a sort of thing that ever happens in Waverly. They would tell you that you hear about these things elsewhere, but never there. And it was no simple robbery, as the suspects all claimed. The three men claimed they were just robbing him. The, as I said, savagery of the attack led everyone to believe that it was sexual orientation that was the motive. Daniel's roommate, when he lived back in Texas before he moved to the little town in Ohio, said he was a gentleman. I'm sure that it did not take three men armed with boards and bricks to simply steal his cash, and he would have never have initiated something like that. The prosecutor shared that suspicion and pointed out that since he was stripped and the severity of the beating, he was quite sure it was a hate crime. He noticed and pointed out that in most robbery cases, you know, victims may be punched or stabbed, but never beaten and stripped and thrown in a dumpster. Nothing this savage. And experts will tell you that crimes that are based on sexual orientation are always more brutal than your typical assault. Gay bashings are more likely to involve hammers, baseball bats, golf clubs, and ice picks, and are characterized by overkill. In fact, investigators who find crimes that involve hammers, baseball bats, golf clubs, and ice picks often put either sexual orientation hate or race orientation or race, you know what I'm saying, high on the list, because these things cause a higher level of emotional reaction on the part of the attacker. If you can conceive of an attacker doing something like that who would have any emotion other than just hate, it's what makes these crimes different from ordinary crimes. But you see, Ohio has no hate crimes law. The best that the prosecutor could do was to upgrade the charges against Baxter and Furman to include aggravated robbery, abduction, and tampering with evidence. And with the original murder charge, they faced the death penalty. One of them pleaded no contest, and he was sentenced to 7 years in prison for his testimony. The others pleaded guilty to aggravated murder and tampering with evidence, and both will be eligible for parole within 20 years. During Baxter's plea hearing, Juanita Meek, who is Daniel's mother, was given the opportunity to speak to Baxter about what he did to her son. She said to him in front of the court and in front of the judge, "You put out both of his eyes. You broke his nose. You knocked out his teeth. You broke his Adam's apple. You broke his neck. You broke all but one of his ribs. You punctured his heart and his lungs." And then she asked Baxter if her son had begged for his life as he was being beaten to death. And this animal laughed at her out loud in front of the judge in the entire courtroom. No one there could believe what they were seeing. Everything she said to him, he would smirk and laugh out loud. His mother and the other family member there, his sister, were both devastated. But see, this is not counted in the hate crimes laws that you see tallied up, my good friends. No, this is not tallied up. No hate crime law in the book. There's closest thing, there's a hate crime law to prevent ethnic intimidation. The law, in fact, that comes down the hardest is on telephone harassment, and sexual orientation is not included. And because Ohio has no state hate crimes law, much like Florida and many others, let alone one covers sexual orientation, because the defendants agreed to a plea bargain, there was no need in the courtroom to make any connection between Daniel's murder and his sexual orientation. It was irrelevant because of having no hate crimes law. The prosecutor did the very best he could. He put the three men away for as long as he possibly could. And that, my friends, is a sad story to begin the evening. There are more. The moral of the story being, yes, I think hate crimes laws, considering things like this happen over, you know, they see these reports never get out beyond just the region. This is no doubt huge in the local paper, and maybe in southern Ohio. Probably didn't even make the paper except in the third or fourth page. In the larger cities, murders are an everyday occurrence, of course, in larger cities, but these annihilation murders are getting pretty sad. Tell you what, we are going to have Daryl on, I believe, at the bottom of the hour. I have a couple of short audio clips I'm going to run to for you. We'll get those out of the way. This is on a different subject. These are not audio clips regarding the story that I just told you about. This is from the Value Voters Summit, which is, of course, the massive gathering that was back in Colorado. It was brought on by the mega ministry, the Focus on the Family, and there was Rudy Giuliani was there, and all the other Republicans, red-faced and screaming, each one trying to pump up the volume on hating gay folks higher and higher than the one that preceded him. There are many interesting clips on all variety of subjects, not just the LGBTQ community, but I picked out just three short ones I'd like to share with you. That, you know, I could tell you the whole story about and about the conference and who was there and how long it went and the big screen television sets and the suits and the lobbyists that were there, et cetera, but I think if I just give you these three clips, quickly understand. First short clip is Janet Folger. She's with the Association of Maryland Families. She is in a panic in this clip, as are many of the right-wing fundamentalists, because they are about to lose everything. They know it's coming. They say they're one vote away from winning everything that they fought for so many years. Or they're one vote away from losing everything that they fought for. And even higher than the presidential election, they are referring to the Supreme Court. If we could just get one more person appointed. It's a short clip. Bob, if you'd run Lose Everything.
Here's the point. We have never, in my history, never been in an election where we could lose everything we have ever done in the last 3.5 decades with one vote. Or we could gain everything we have worked for with the next president and the next Supreme Court judge.
Yes, they could in fact lose everything, and Godspeed the day that they do. Then we have a short quote by a lobbyist who is informing everyone to pump up the fear that, yes, my friends, homosexuality can strike you. It's true. No matter how long you've been married or how much you love your wife or your husband, the psychological disorder could manifest itself, and you could, in fact, go gay. Must be true they said so. Bob, would you run the homo could strike you clip?
Now, homosexuality is very clearly a gender identity confusion.
You said that the lifestyle is very seductive and it's hard to get out of it.
Well, it's a groove. You get in that groove and you're up the creek without a paddle. But remember, homosexuality could strike you. It could strike this man here taking the...
How could it strike me?
Because you could go into a gender identity confusion because it is a psychological imbalance.
Yeah.
Something happens in a person's life. It's not only... It becomes a spirit.
Sorry, I did have to laugh out loud while I... It's not only a spirit, it's something that could just come up. It's a psychological problem. You know, these people believe that. These people are so fragile about their sexual orientation, so insecure, these right-wing Republican bastards who are... In fact, there's another story I'm going to do later with one of them that was just found in an adult bookstore wearing red female, a woman's red, stockings and black undies, I believe, with sequins. I mean, you know, they just don't dress well. They dress like, you know, a trailer park hooker on a Saturday night. But they're Republicans. Tell you, tacky, as Bob just pointed out in chat. Which is not to diminish our dear friends who live in mobile homes. I have some friends who live in mobile homes. Kiss, kiss. And then we have the breathless, hate-filled black lady, who she was one of the speakers. I honestly have forgotten which contingent of demons that she represents. It could have been any one of them. This is the very shortest clip, but it is the most shocking. She is advocating that sodomites be quarantined. Yes, much like the Japanese or the Germans. It's awfully short. I think it's only like 20 seconds or so. But you got to hear her say this. Bob, please run sodomites quarantined.
We wanted sodomites quarantined.
Yes, that's what she wants. And she's going to go back up with the speaker stand in front of these conferences and say it again. Bob, please run it again. I just love the way she
says it. We wanted sodomites quarantined.
Oh, dear Lord. Can you imagine how festive that would be? I mean, you know, it's not funny, really. You consider the misery that the Japanese went through and the Germans went through. But you have to laugh or you can't get through this stuff. You can't. Telling you about some of this stuff rips my heart out, and so I laugh inappropriately. I still love you, though, and I don't mean anything by it. But wouldn't it be festive? We'd have a little disco and the side of our. We'd have our little transistor radios trying to tune in the, you know, and the lesbians would be chopping down trees and making little log cabins for us. Oh my! And the gay guys would be out picking nuts and berries. And the transsexuals would be sitting there looking at us, shaking their heads. Oh, God, I love the LGBT community. We're going to, later in the show, go into in-depth about the vocabulary and the syntax and the language that the right uses. They use it in very, very different ways than you and I use the language. And, in fact, it is studied and they have researched it. They train their people to use these terms. And by the way, the clip I just ran, the audio clips, came from Max Blumenthal, who infiltrated the conference. There were several people that wouldn't talk to him. They'd ask him, are you with YouTube or are you with MySpace? And he'd say, yes. Get out of here. I won't talk to you. There are constantly people coming up and turning off his camera. That all came from Max Blumenthal. He's a very brave man. He just goes anywhere, and he'll just walk up to him and ask him anything. You got to hand it to that guy. He's got some nerves. Got to love a guy like that. Where was I? Yes, we're going to go into the story about their vocabulary and their vernacular. It's much like learning a foreign language. They rearrange subject verbs to, well, you'll see. It's all very interesting. We'll get into that later in the program. That was from the Values Voters Summit. And we have some other audio clips that we will run later in the evening. And let's see, I believe we're moving up onto the bottom of the hour. We'll go to break here in just a second. You know, what can I tell you? Oh, yeah, the story about the Representative Kent Curtis, that's another one of those, you know, bathroom, there's a condom involved, and there's a stethoscope involved, and there's Pat Robertson trying to defend it all. It's hysterical. So much to cover. And, of course, he has resigned. And so, having said all of those things, we will go into the bottom of the hour break. When we come back, I hope we'll have our friend Daryl Ross with us. He'll introduce one of his new songs called I Never Knew, which should be, in fact, I'll listen to it 3 or 4 times a day. I love it. And so, as we come from the bottom of the hour, this is Peter Godbold on Strictly Confidential, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network.
Your kiss is so good, I got to hold on hell. You didn't have- We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
Well, Clear Channel may not be able to play the boss, but I sure as hell can. And in fact, if I had, I've got to get a hold of his new, we've got to run that stuff here. If Clear Channel isn't putting it out, you got to love the boss. I used to play some of his stuff when I was DJing in the clubs. Everybody loves the boss. Oh, I guess some people don't. I heard one guy talking about the boss once. He said, he reminds me too much of, who was the guy who did Devil with a Blue Dress? Was it Mitch Ryder? Yes, he said he was trying. He was his take on the boss, Bruce Springsteen, was that he was just a Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels wannabe. Of course, I was horrified and shook my head and wandered away. But nonetheless, not everybody loves the boss, but I certainly do. We'll have to try to get some of his new music. Boy, yeah, they've gotten so. They're so scared, you know. The lyrics are probably not even all that aggressive, but you know, anything that's mainstream, you cannot have any dissension in the mainstream. You know, it breaks the control. You know, it breaks the subliminal messages. I don't know if you've ever seen an old horror movie. It's called They Live. It's about if you wear these special sunglasses, you can see that certain people are aliens and they're taking over the planet. But you can only see them if you have these sunglasses, and it breaks the signals that are coming from all the television stations and what have you. That's anyway, glory days. Gotta love that song. I want to tell you a little story about Alabama. I'll tell you a couple of short stories now. Alabama is the only state in the union. Read that again. Alabama is the only state in the union. Now, you know I'm going to come up with something bad next, right? You know, Alabama is the only state in the union, followed by, you know, it's going to be bad. This isn't a long story. It's a brief. It's the only state in the union to segregate HIV-positive prisoners in housing, completely excluding them from prison programs. They limit their visitation. They can't participate in any of the, for instance, Alcoholics Anonymous or the, going out. So they're locked in their cells for 23, sometimes 24 hours a day. You know, they can't come out and socialize, earn any gain. So you have to be what's called a trustee in prison to earn what's called gain time. And you get some that's on, but gain time is where you get your sentence shortened, and you do that by working. Not only do you get 6 cents an hour, you get a shorter sentence. Well, of course, they can't get any gain time. They're locked away. Abysmal medical care. The Alabama Department of Corrections has agreed to allow prisoners with HIV greater access, but they're refusing to end the segregation. So they're all locked away in their own segregated housing. It's a little bit like what I was waxing on about earlier when we're all isolated from one another with the woman that wanted to... What was the word she used to, I forget, isolate us, other crazy, but you know, this stuff, I have to let it go in one ear and out the other, because if I hold it inside, I just go boom on the air. No question about it. At any case, the place called Limestone Correctional is where the men are retained. There's another place where the women are retained that have HIV. Medical care is spotty. Sometimes prisoners go for weeks and weeks or months when they're first taken into the prison system without their medications. And there's overwhelming evidence, of course, that exclusion of prisoners from educational vocational corrections programs is a huge detriment to their sanity when you come out of being locked in a room by yourself for 23 hours a day. You know. So the story is basically that for decades, HIV-positive folks in Alabama have served longer and harsher sentences solely due to their HIV status. And they've been denied opportunities to improve themselves and locked away 23, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And that's from the ACLU of Alabama. By the way, I call the fellow who just won the first office is the first out LGBT person who's won an office in Alabama. I've contacted his office. I'm hoping to have him on the show soon. I think we need to hear a more cheerful perspective on Alabama. Joining us now, and I'm so pleased to have Daryl Russ back with us. Daryl Russ is the fellow, if you'll recall, he was with us on the 16th. There's an archive there on October the 16th calendar. He's a singer-songwriter based in Baltimore and the D.C. area, and his style ranges from disco to soul and country and R&B. It's an incredible range. As I mentioned to you earlier, we talked about so many things with Daryl when he was with us before that we did not get to all of his songs. So Daryl is joining us to tell us what's up currently and help us introduce his next track. Daryl, welcome to the show.
I'm here.
Dude, I'm so glad to talk to you. I thought we might have missed you again.
No, I'm here, but I can barely hear you.
Okay, the studio will adjust the volume and send and give you a larger send. Is it getting any better now?
It's still pretty it's pretty quiet. You sound like you're way off in the distance.
I'll speak as loudly as possible. Hopefully they can adjust that. Daryl, how are things going regarding the work that you're doing on the new music? And just give us a fill-in since we last talked to you.
Well, when I last talked to you, I mentioned that we were going to start filming the video for Riding Home from Baltimore. That has commenced. We got some footage, last Saturday. We were out for a couple of hours. That was my lip sync section, if you will. But we've got to go in and do some more stuff in a studio. And then we're going to go and hit Baltimore and cut some footage down there and try to get this thing ready for the edit once the track comes back from over in Germany, so that we can do a good, you know, nice edit with, you know, quick, fast edits, because it is a fast song. And we want to make sure that we keep the viewer, if they like the song, hopefully they'll like the video, and in turn, you know, it would be an entertaining video. So, and it's this guy's first time really doing this kind of stuff. He's very experienced, but he wanted to crack at this, and I got a look. Vision, it looked pretty good. I didn't look like a power dork, believe it or not. So it went well, and it's underway.
Well, Daryl, how do you manage to get these things marketed? I mean, it's got, you know, how can I tell you? My perception of how the music business works is that these are these huge barriers to getting anything like a video played on MTV or VH1. I'm imagining, you know, layer after layer of offices with people with their hands out wanting cash. How do you manage to get anything played?
Well, it's very, very, very difficult, and it's very draining. But with that particular song, you know, he has a production company in Germany, and he was interested in working with me, and so I want to give him every tool that he can to market the song and see if it'll take off over there. So, you know, you got to have a video today, and I'm just kind of hoping that this is the little, you know, catalyst, so to speak, that might push things further. That's what I'm really praying for. I've been working on these recordings and stuff for the last 2 years. The EP got released, and now the full album is on its way. There's, you know, as I mentioned to you before, there's the photos and all this. And I was real nervous doing this, starting this video, because I've never done one. And I mean, I'm an entertainer and all that, but I just never had done this particular type of thing before. So it was exciting. It was actually fun. But again, you know, I was nervous because it's new ground for me. But, you know, if anything becomes, I guess I'd have to get used to it, because these are the things you just have to do. And it was fun, you know. And this isn't going to cost me a whole lot. And I've got a friend who got an inheritance, and he's helping me out financially. He's a comical guy. His name is Monty. He's a scream. And he really, you know, has believed in me for a while. And he's like, look, I want to help you out. So he's been helping me.
News.
So he even bought one of those Shure, Shure S55SH, one of those old-time Elvis mics. And I wanted that as a prop. Well, I got one off of eBay that actually works, and I'm like, ooh, I want to use that thing. But we used it as a prop, and we'll use it again as a prop here in the inside studio stuff, because we want to get, you have to get a lot of footage for three and a half minutes.
Daryl,
you need probably at least 2 hours worth of footage, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that Daryl, that the song we're talking about is Riding Home from Baltimore, which is about the first time you heard Donna Summer. You actually heard it. You heard it riding home, I think, with your folks from Baltimore. How do you mix? Do you mix images of Donna Summer in with this video? How do you get that across in a video?
Well, we're gonna pull some stuff off of YouTube. I know her lawyers are in New York, and hopefully we don't need their permission for that video footage, because actually that's out on YouTube, so that's kind of free. You know, and I don't want her mad at me. You know, I just want to, you know, accolade. So, you know, but if that were to be a legal problem, I would just use, you know, a couple little photo images here and there, you know, that kind of spin up, you know, an album cover or one of her real good shots, you know. And the way that I'm going to try to push this on YouTube, and there's stuff out there everywhere, but by putting her name in the search engine, it'll get up under all the Donna Summer stuff. And in fact, once that's done too, there's her tribute site that Kathy in Long Island does, and that gets a lot of traffic. And she's already pushed our radio interview. It's on the site, as I mentioned to you in an email. And I know Donna does check that regularly.
Wonderful,
she has
right? I noticed
site
that
too. But actually, this one here I think gets more traffic than hers.
Yeah,
but
I noticed that.
You know, again, you know, with that there, it's really just the luck of the draw. It's like anything else. You know, you just got to hope that you got the 1, 2, 3, then bam. You know, that's what I'm really hoping for.
Yeah, I noticed that they had added the Head On Radio Network link to the site, which I thought was pretty cool. Maybe one day, Daryl, you can come on with Diana Ross. That'd be wonderful. Daryl, tell us about this new track and what album it will be on and the track we're going to run tonight. How did this track happen? We're going to be running that in a few minutes.
Okay, well, I'd actually met Justin Timberlake about 8 years ago when I worked at Virgin Megastore. Actually, the group NSYNC, we got to meet them before they did their in-store, and they were really fellas. And he's a nice guy, and he's got a great voice. And I bought his last album, and the first track, you know, Sexy Back was everywhere, and that's a great song. But the first track off of the album knocked me right off of my seat, you know, from the first thump, thump, thump. I'm like, that's old funk. I mean, Timbaland produced most of this album. And I just was like, that is really cool. And it was just real sexy, and I said to the people that I'm working with, I said, I want to do something in that vein, because I can pull that off. It's, you know, a suggestive a little, and I don't want to copy that, because it's already been done. You don't want to copy anybody. You want to do your own thing. And we together and threw it down, and it took several trips to Virginia to get it done, but I was really impressed with the final, you know, the final mix. It took, he sent me one mix, and I have a good friend in radio who is very honest with me, and I sent it to her, and she goes, you're too far in the background. Everything else that you've done has really got you out front. They need to bring you up a lot further. And I went back and said, hey, you know, this is a real good radio opinion, and I want to be radio friendly. You know, I want to reach as many people as I can. It's difficult as it is in today's world, period, in the music business to reach anybody, because there's thousands of us out there. I want something that is now, that, you know, would mix, as I say, like, I like to say that I mix, my influences come from the old school, but I want it to be in the new school. You know, I want to be today, I want to be current, I want to be, you know, as close to hit possibilities as possible, because I don't have a whole lot of time to play.
Yeah, I understand. So, well, Daryl, is this the track we're about to play? Is this the track with the enhanced lyrics?
This is the one called I Never Knew. This was in the vein of the Future Sex song.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the one where we, you know, we had to go back and forth with this one. And it just got real funky, and I was really pleased with it.
Well, Daryl, I've listened to it several times today, and I have enjoyed it. And again, it demonstrates the wide range, everything from disco to R&B that you do. And I'm so glad that you were able to talk with us this evening, and I'm sorry we missed it last time. But nonetheless, we have it for you tonight. And this is Daryl Russ with his new track, I Never Knew. Was I Never Knew, which was the track by Daryl Russ. If you'd like to go back and hear the original Daryl Russ interview, he's a very interesting fellow, and he was with us on the 16th, I believe. Yes, October 16th. Just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com and go to the October schedule, and you'll find the link to that interview in the October 16th date. That's Daryl, who's based in Baltimore and D.C., Daryl Russ. You know, the video that I extracted the audio from, we ran it a little while ago from the Value Voters. That was actually a video. I pulled the audio. Remember, our friend Max Blumenthal, as I was saying, is a very brave man who acts as a spy, and he goes into these Value Voters, and they throw him out, and they try to find out who he is. They won't talk to him, but he does a marvelous job of penetrating. There's another fellow who does that for us, not for the Head On Radio Network specifically, but does it for us as the human race of people who believe in reality. And his name is Jim Burroway. And Jim Burroway's area of expertise, as best I can tell, is sneaking into the conferences from the ex-gays. And the Love One Out ex-gay conference is the one he most recently has infiltrated. It's the Focus on the Family. I think it was Focus on the Family who sponsored the Value. You know, Focus on the Family is big on these conferences and beating people up, aren't they? Well, this is another one of the Focus on the Family / Exodus conferences. Now, Jim Burroway has a very detailed view on this conference and goes into the use of the English language, which I found very, very interesting. It helps to try to at least somehow understand these people. It's as if they're from another planet. Jim Burroway tells us that, you know, if you're taking Spanish in high school or it's your first Spanish course and your early Spanish, you know, one of the first phrases that you're going to learn is how to say that you like something. So in English, he's telling us that a simple sentence would be, I like ice cream. And I like ice cream. Simple English statement. How would you say it in Spanish? Well, in English, the subject does something. I would be the subject, and the subject does something. It's an active. The subject does something, namely like. To like is an action. And then the object of the sentence, of course, is the ice cream. So I, the subject, like the action, ice cream. And it's a direct object. It's the thing, the ice cream, that receives the action. It doesn't really get much simpler than that. But if you're going to say that in Spanish, there's no word in Spanish for the word like. The word they use, and pardon me, I've Spanish as many years ago, is gustar, G-U-S-T-A-R, which literally means pleases. so instead of saying, I like ice cream, they would say, ice cream pleases me. Now, Burway is pointing out how this turns everything around from the English. In English, if you don't like something, you see, then it is up to you to explain yourself, because you are I is the word that's acting on the verb, acting on part of the verb. So, you know, if you say, I like ice cream, or if you say, I don't like ice cream, well, the obvious question is, well, why don't you like it? But in Spanish, using the word please, if you say, ice cream doesn't please me, you have to look to the ice cream to understand what's wrong with it. You don't look to the subject, because it's not an active verb like. Ice cream doesn't please me doesn't mean it's your fault. It's you could just say that and forget it. It's a subtle difference. Do we like something, or does something please us, is what Jim Burway is getting at. And this is his way of decoding the language that's being used in these meetings. It influences how you see the world around you, and it influences what might be different, you know, for someone who's a native, say, Spanish speaker as an English Spanish speaker. So if it's true that language shapes the world that you live in, and obviously we know that language does shape the world. In fact, I'm an old proponent of, in Genesis it says, let there be light. I think that's more of an illustration of the power of language than it is the power of creation. But then again, that's just me, and if you don't believe that, that's entirely your prerogative. But I think that language is extremely powerful, very, very powerful. So Jim Burway is examining the language that he heard and that was used at the Love Won Out conference. Now, Love Won Out is, of course, an ex-gay conference that he attended in Phoenix. And Mr. Burway points out it was like an anthropologist being on Mars, because he observed a culture that had vaguely familiar languages. The words were familiar, and vaguely familiar customs, but to learn the language and to understand the framework and the worldview, you know, how Love Won Out works, and this is true of any culture, you have to sort of totally immerse yourself inside the culture of Love Won Out or any of these other organizations to fully pick up on all the nuances of the terms and the customs that they use and that they do. So it's not particularly odd. You know, every group of people has its own little version of, you know, shortcuts in language. I know gay guys do. I know lesbian women do. I know people who love baseball, for instance, do. They have their own little shortcut language. They can say things quickly, and another person might not understand. Any number of groups. I don't care if you're, a professional chef, whatever. But you have to, every group has its own little version. But in the Love Won Out scenario, their dialect is built on, it's a common theological thing, is the way they're approaching it. And it's all part of being in the evangelical Christian movement. And what he's telling us is that the language that was spoken at Love Won Out is beyond the language of evangelical Christianity, and it's even a subset of that. It's kind of like a dialect. It's like a dialect of the larger evangelical Christian culture. It's like I suppose the difference between the folks who live in England and the folks that live in the United States. We both speak English, but it's a totally different dialect. And he's making that analogy. So, focus on the family. In Exodus, they exercise an amazing degree of discipline, is what Jim is trying to get across to us. They construct their messages very differently according to the audience that they're addressing. This is all very calculated, and that's why their messages are so effective. One of the people who spoke, a man named Haley, who's the director of gender issues at Focus on the Family, talked about it during one of the morning sessions, and he gave a good example of how, varying the language could be used. He says, in the year 2004, when I was doing the research for my book, I found that we spent $20 billion that year in the U.S. for our work on missions. And what do we do with the money? Well, what we do with that money is take individuals' lives. They are committed to that group of people. We set them aside. We support them. We pray for them. We pour money into their lives, and we help them get to the people that they're trying to reach. In other words, we're talking about the missionaries from the Focus on the Family. We help them study and learn another language if they're, you know, overseas ministries. No. And it's all, the way he's putting it is to reach people for Christ. So these people are going to take time out of their ordinary lives and study the social nuances of the people that they want to reach so that they become part of them, so that they won't offend them. Instead, you know, what they'll do, instead of offending them but not understanding their culture, they will draw them to Christ, is what he's saying at his morning conference. So what he's saying again is, the challenge is for how much money, effort, and energy are we going to put into reaching what we call the unwanted harvest? And yes, dear brothers and sisters, us LGBT folks, we are the unwanted harvest. So this is what they're discussing there. That's known as the gay and lesbian community. And he said there's some things that we do within the body of Christ that are incredibly offensive. And let me just tell you one. The use of the phrase, love the sinner, hate the sin, is offensive to these people. I mean, yes. He says, what are we ultimately saying when we use that phrase? What we're saying to someone is, I love you, but I hate what you're doing. But you have to see it from a gay person's perspective. Now, mind you, this is Haley, one of the speakers from Focus on the Family. He said, but you have to see it from a gay person's perspective. He says, they see themselves as defined by the very thing they're doing. So they believe that when you hate what they're doing, you hate them to the very core. So we have to lose that phrase out of our vocabulary. It does not translate into the marketplace. Interesting choice of words, isn't it? In a conference about saving everybody, worrying about the marketability of it. No, money, money, money. Can't believe the amount of money they're making on stuff like this. So anyway, the writer is pointing out to us, Mr. Burway, is pointing out that Mike has it about half right in explaining why that phrase is offensive. He points out, too, that it's not really the point, though. What you haven't noticed is this. Because the phrase love the sinner and hate the sin is used so often among anti-gay Christians, it turns out that neither Focus on the Family nor Exodus will use this particular phrase anymore. They've moved beyond using that phrase. They're not using love is the sinner, or love the sinner, hate the sin. They say it lacks nuance, and they say it lacks sophistication. So the sentiment is still very much there, but it's expressed very differently. They are extremely, and this is the writer of the article, the Focus on the Family and others like them, the ex-gay movement, they are extremely conscious of how words are received by their target audience, which is what the fellow referred to as the marketplace. No matter what the audience might be, it's just that their choice of audience is almost never the LGBT community. They are not talking to us, my friends. If they were talking to us, you can bet they'd choose an entirely different sin structure, language structure, but they are not directing this message toward us. Focus on the Family in Exodus, they spend a great deal of resources to develop phrases and terminology. So they're doing it very specifically. They've crafted an entire language. It's complete with its own dictionary, its own syntax, and its own cross-references, its own lexicon. They have crafted an entire language. He gives us an example. The terms they use for describing gay people are very different than yours and mine, meaning yours and mine, mine as a gay man or someone as a lesbian or transgender or bisexual. The words that they use are very different than yours or mine. The problem, you see, Mike Haley's problem, the fellow from Focus on the Family, his problem with love the sin, hate the sinner, that's exactly what he's saying. The problem is love the sin, hate the sinner. It provides a glimpse into the difference. And when you reverse it, I'm intentionally reversing it there. It provides a glimpse into the distance, into the difference. It has relates back to the thing we learned about the Spanish, I like ice cream or ice cream pleases me. Their language is specifically designed to treat people and to treat them as if their sexuality were two completely different entities, as if your sexuality were a separate thing. It's an entirely separate thing outside of you. It's not part of you as a person. One of the women who spoke during a session there says that we are constantly working to separate the who from the do, which is a crude or perhaps more sophisticated way of saying the sinner and the sin. We're trying to separate the who from the do. So, see, here's the way they do it. They're only talking about sexuality. They will not talk about romantic yearnings or affairs of the heart or any sort of whole-bodied personal relationship. It's a separation. So when you separate gays and lesbians from their sexuality, that seems like a very reasonable thing to the love one out type of people. So the romance, you know, see, if they included terms like romance, they'd have to include notions like a soulmate or falling in love or loving someone with all your might. And all of those things, you see, that involve the whole person. You see, even the poets can't separate this thing called love. You can't separate it and you can't compartmentalize it. But you see, with love won out, the gay romance, the love relationships are treated as evidence of pathology, which is an interesting point. He's saying that Nicolosi, who's the president of the National Association for the Research and Treatment of Homosexuality, describes gay relationships in men as an attempt to capture the masculinity of another man that's missing in oneself because his own masculinity is broken. And this reduces all notions of romance to some sort of reparative therapy, or in some way, another way to look at it is that the organism is trying to repair itself. He says that heterosexuality is complementary and homosexuality is compensatory. Lord have mercy. You see, homosexuality is seen by them as something that happens to someone. It's due to poor parenting, it's due to sexual abuse, it's due to any of the other factors. They also will insist there that it's not the child's fault. When the boy grows up, he tries to fill his damaged masculinity with other men. Now, they're offering similar explanations for lesbians. They all run along the same lines. So, you got Alan Chambers, who's president of Exodus, and the firewoman focused on the family. They both refer to gay relationships as an illegitimate way of meeting a legitimate need. So, another way of saying that, you see, is that the problem is not that I, as a gay man, like other men, am like other men. The problem is that other men are pleasing to me. Let me redo that. You see, he's saying that you can't say, I like other men. You see, the problem is that other men are pleasing to me. Back to the ice cream statement. When you use language that separates the person from their sexuality, it's a very important concept in the love one out thing. You always have to separate the sexuality from the person. You can never address the whole person. And he points out to us that in his experience with the conference, the thing that they're trying to get a point across to their people is that there's no such thing as a homosexual. So the language of the love one out people, it represents a distinct dialect in Christianity, and the first order of business in the conference was to teach everyone the elements of the dialect. So this Nicolosi, he began his speech one morning by saying, there's no such thing as a homosexual. And of course he realized that people didn't understand him, so he said it again, there's no such thing as a homosexual. He is a heterosexual, but he may have a homosexual problem. This may answer a question that was asked in the chat room a little bit about these Republicans who keep sleeping with men and saying that they're not gay. They are in fact believing this pitch, that they are heterosexual but they have a homosexual problem. So that's the first lesson. The words gay and lesbian and homosexual are not nouns, they're adjectives. And he's saying that adjectives are never used to describe a person. You see, there are no gay teenagers. There are no homosexual men. There are no lesbian women. Instead, you use those as modifiers to something else. And it's a struggle. In other words, you change it to they're having a struggle with their identity. And the issue is separate from the person. And they're saying that because it's very different how these terms are used, this is how... Well, here again, they're not talking to us. They're talking to other straight people to get them to buy this. Because, you know, as we've talked about on the show, straight people don't get us anyway. So this is the language they're using to convey what they want. It's and this is in an evangelical sense. The language that they use is different than other anti-gay activists. The Christian anti-gay activists are using an entirely different mindset and thinking about it. It's very confusing. The phrases, they sound, you know, odd, they sound, you know, stilted, but he's pointing out that as the day went on and as the days went on, the oddness started to pass away, and you could get into the cadence of it, and you began to speak that way, too. It's something that they learned to do. So all the speakers at the Love One Out conference, they stuck really close to the grammar, with very, very consistent about it, and they it was, you know, very highly evolved in their... in their mastering of particular phrases. It was very calculated. And even if a speaker slipped and somehow, you know, said the phrases incorrectly, they were very quick to, you know, pick up and correct themselves. Here's the way they do it. At the conference, they say, we see three types of fathers who are the fathers of homosexual men. Again, when I say homosexual, I don't mean he's intrinsically homosexual. He's heterosexual with a homosexual problem. So you see, he used the word homosexual as an adjective, but then he had to go back and correct himself. So see, what they're doing is they're laying the groundwork. And Love One Out people have a very specific way to describe gays and lesbians and anybody else who's experienced a sexual or romantic attraction for someone of the same sex. But by the way, bisexuals and transsexuals were completely left out of the discussion. I guess that's too much complexity for them. But generally speaking, the descriptions fell into four broad categories. And this is how they separate the who from the do. Now, the first category is those who struggle with homosexuality. Now, the definition for the group is a little bit unclear, but mostly they use they're trying to describe someone who experiences unwanted same-sex attractions. The Alan Chambers guy of the Exodus movement went further than that. He's, you know, in the who and do phrasing. He says that those who struggle with the issue of homosexuality, and so if you call it the issue of homosexuality, it even makes homosexuality sound even more distant. It's not just homosexuality you're struggling with, it's the issue of it. So for those who struggle with homosexuality, it's described as anyone who believes that homosexuality is wrong but found themselves attracted to someone of the same sex. So those you're struggling with homosexuality at that point. Now the odd thing about people who struggle with homosexuality is that just believing that homosexuality is wrong it's not always a requirement to be in the category. So, you know, what I'm saying is that most of the people at the conference, with the exception of maybe a few teenagers who were dragged there by their parents, the majority of the people at the conference were not struggling with their homosexuality. They were there because they had a son or a daughter or a nephew and so forth they're trying to fix. So they're trying to make this inclusive that it is the parent also who is struggling with the homosexuality. It's the mother, it's the uncle. You know, if you have a relative, you are also in the category of those who struggle with sexuality. It includes your coworkers and your friends, etc., etc. And they addressed a lot of the comments to parents. They would say things like, if your son or daughter is struggling with homosexuality, and, you know, just stuff like that. But the next category they would put you into is called gay identified. Now, these categories are getting worse and worse as we move along. The first one is the light duty category. Now we're moving into the folks who are gay identified. And the people who spoke, they were very, very careful about that. A woman would be lesbian identified, a man would be gay identified, but you see again, they're separating the who from the do. They're saying, I'm not gay, I just have a gay identity. I am gay identified in that sense. So any notion of being of orientation or a healthy relationship is completely ignored, and there's no such thing as a homosexual, that it must be true that there's no such thing as a gay or a lesbian. So, in other words, your sexuality is something like a coat that you put on and you take off. So anyone who is struggling with homosexuality is seeing it being, you're at the crossroads, and there are only two directions you can go. One direction is to accept the biblical sexual ethic, and the other is to begin a journey, if you accept the biblical direction, you begin your journey out of homosexuality. And if you fail that, then the only other direction you can go is to the world of being gay identified or lesbian identified. So, the gay identified is considered more tragic, or gay or lesbian identified. And people who are gay identified or lesbian identified are considered less reachable by the ex-gay folks, because they're by definition involved in the gay community and the gay lifestyle, and of course the lifestyle's all sorts of dangers and misery and sexual addictions and drug addictions, emotional addictions, and on and on and on and on. So, these people are like little tribes. They have this vocabulary. There's another classification, and that's on the journey out of homosexuality. These are very specific categories. So when someone is struggling with homosexuality and decides that he or she does not want to be gay identified, then that person is said to have embarked on a journey out of homosexuality. And then comes this concept of change. But it's not any sort of change of the change that they're talking about is the accepting a new identity in Jesus Christ, is what they're saying to you. They are saying that, if you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, then by definition you can no longer be a homosexual or a heterosexual with homosexual problems, because Jesus will take care of that for you. So the stuff just amazes me. And see, all of this is actually religion. They have fellow Nicolosi who's there, he's like a scientist, and his job at the conference is to to give a scientific air to the whole thing. He's saying that with Jesus Christ there is no space for a sex with a guy, or in the case of a woman, a sex with a woman. And each of them, the ones who recover, they would get up at the end of the sessions. They would show pictures of their wives and their family. And the case of the woman, she just had to describe who she was attracted to, or the kind of men she liked, because she was not married. She made some crack about a man wearing a kilt, some reference. I have no idea where it went right off the top of my hand, but what was it? A tall man with red hair wearing a kilt was it? In other words, she was having to put up an image of who she was. In other words, everybody had to demonstrate that somehow or another Jesus had healed them from their homosexuality. So I just thought I would share that with you. I realize that was a lot of stuff to go through, but just wanted to get across the thing is that there's no such thing as a homosexual. We are heterosexuals with homosexual problems, and the recovery from that is to accept Jesus, not to somehow go through these reparative reparative things like the shock treatment and the giving you drugs that make you nauseous while looking at people of the same sex, and all the different things they have tried. That's not the answer. They're saying that you just need to accept Jesus Christ, and then by definition that problem will go away, your problem with homosexuality. So maybe this is how all these straight guys are doing the bit with all the public sex, and then coming on and seriously saying, I'm not gay, and people believing them that they're not gay. In fact, let's look at this story. I have where'd that article go about the senator that was just kicked out of the, he was from Washington State. here, the cross-dressing lawmaker. I have an interesting audio clip. Normally I slice these audio clips up, but this one I'm just going to run complete because it tells the story so succinctly. It has, it has both Pat Robertson and Laura Flanders in it from Air America at the end. And Pat Robertson is desperately trying to defend Curtis Hooker, who says he's not gay, but he was dressed up in women's clothes in a bookstore and paying a gay prostitute to meet him in his hotel room. You know, this is so typical for a Republican. The Republican offered the gay prostitute $1,000 if he'd come back to the hotel room, but he only had $100 on him, so he gave him the $100 and told him he'd pay him back later. So the guy takes the $100. Then later, instead of giving him the rest of the money, he calls the police and claims that the hooker stole his money. You know, it's just so Republican. You know, they'll promise you $1,000, they'll give you $100, and then say you stole it. It's just like the social programs. They put it in line of, they put it in the same way that they do their political, rather their social program. Before we run that audio clip, I do have Susan on the line. Susan, welcome to the show. I need to take a sip of water and welcome to the show, Susan.
Hi, Peter.
Greetings to you, my dear. I got off on a long tirade there and I'm just wandering behind the chickens. How are you, my dear?
Oh, I'm just fine. I can barely hear you, though.
Okay, there seems to be an issue with that this evening. I don't think the guest that we had briefly earlier could hear me either. He wasn't cutting me off. He just couldn't hear me. But I'll speak as loudly as possible. How was Halloween? What did you do?
Well, being Wiccan, I did my religious ceremony and basically let it go with that.
Well, I knew you would celebrate Halloween differently. What can you tell us what that was, or is that kind of a sacred thing you do? I'm deadly curious. You know, I'll ask anything.
It varies from person to person, depending on whether or not you're a solitary or whether or not you belong to a coven. If you're with a coven, it is a great, big, boisterous, happy ceremony around a bonfire. Mine was quite a bit quieter with an altar. And basically, I just had a quiet chat with the lady.
That sounds wonderful. What did you think? I was making cracks earlier. You know about the, I've said it before. You know this thing about the Christians every year. The war on Christmas, but nobody ever says anything about the war on Halloween. And you know that's so true.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I see it all over the place here. There's this one little coffee shop in this town called St. Helens nearby. That used to go out for, you know, decorate for Halloween in a big way. This year, it was Christmas time. You know, the American Taliban had gotten to them, too. There was no, you know, no Halloween to it.
Yeah. I remember Halloween when I was a kid. You know, it hardly trained me to go into any sort of evil thing. You know, we dressed up as monsters. We went door to door with our little plastic jack-o'-lanterns and you know, hoarded up the candy. It's perfectly harmless, but the Christians are just so, they're threatened by anything. It seems to just scream weakness to me. It just screams, I'm so weak I can't even let the kids put on a costume that looks like a skeleton.
I know, it's so stupid.
and it's as if they're trying to say that those costumes somehow reflect being Wiccan. You know, it's just absurd. The whole thing is absurd.
Oh, good grief. And I'm Wiccan, and I have never, ever had anything to do with a skeleton other than the one I happened to be carting around, which it was issued me at birth.
Well, good for you.
You know, what they're doing is they're trying the old bait and switch of, I really doubt if they're so stupid as to do this unintentionally. To me, it's the old bait and switch where they say, Wiccan, oh, Satanist. when nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, you guys are like us. You're so misunderstood. And everybody gets what it gets, you know, gets their stuff from TV and from movies, you know. And life really sucks, Susan.
Yeah, and I have never crossed my arms and blinked my eyes and had anything happen, and I've never twitched my nose and had anything happen.
God, I wish you could.
I wish I could. I'd twitch a whole bunch of money on the horn.
Well, we could use a few bucks here and there. I tell you, we get along, but yeah, you know, we still have our monthly goals.
The reason I called is that one woman who said her image was a redheaded guy in a kilt.
Oh yes, she said
redheaded
exactly that.
Scotsman in a kilt.
Yes, she did.
I just about fell off the chair. What she was describing was a character named Jamie Fraser, a book called Outlander by Diana Gabaldon. In other words, she's been reading a historical, it was originally classified as romance, but it's one of those big, sweeping, multi-generational sagas. And not being able to come up with a proper male image, she just pulled one out of the character of a book.
Yeah, like the mythical Scotsman, you know, with all his mustache and it struck me that way too, Susan, that it was a little bit too much. It was overkill.
Yeah, that particular character has had in this country drooling for years because, oh, yummy, he's yummy. But the imagery is unmistakable.
I agree.
That
and one thing,
if you ran a search warrant on her house, you'd find the books there.
Another thing that caught me when I read that earlier today, Susan, was, you know, she would have been a recovering lesbian who has not found her man yet, but is trying to describe him. But I thought it was interesting that her ideal person was someone in a kilt, and I wondered if there was some psychological sub-connection there to a dress. You know, not that a kilt is a dress, please don't misunderstand, but I'm wondering if in her mind, you know, it was like a, you know, it was like half man, half dress, you know, the horse and the man front.
Only if she doesn't know anything about Scots and kilts, because I gotta tell you, there ain't nothing more sexy than a guy in a full Highland rig out, kilt and all.
Is it getting warm in here?
The place where I used to work it had something like 1,500 call reps in it, and you could always tell when this guy showed up wearing his full Highland rig out by the amount of women with their tongues rolling on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah, life couldn't have been that bad back in those days. It really couldn't have been that bad.
there's just something intrinsically sexy about it. Now, the guy
is a nerd
of the First Order, but having put on a kilt and, oh.
I completely agree.
There's something about it.
I agree. And she had whipped that image right out of one of those novels that you buy at the dime store. You know, the romance novels is always like some guy with that long hair.
Well, they used to call them bodice rippers, but they've grown up.
Yeah.
And they don't do the bodice ripping thing anymore.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of funny. A while back, a lot of those things were written by men, but they would use a woman's name, and you know, as their cover name.
Yeah, I will tell you my, since this is strictly confidential, I will tell you one of my dark secrets.
Okay.
I read romance novels.
Good for you.
And one of the most prolific romance novelists is somebody by the name of Lee Greenwood.
I remember that name. That name, even I recognize that name as being associated with that industry. He's huge.
Who
yeah.
is about as male as it's possible to get.
Is that right? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know.
Lee Greenwood was a guy.
Cool.
And
you
there
know, some
have
of that
been
stuff.
Others. Stephen King at one time wrote romance novels.
He did.
he did when he was first starting out, and he needed something. He was starving, and so he went to one of these schlock houses that they sold what are now known as bodice rippers, and they said, okay, we'll pay you X amount of word.
We know it's kind
so
of funny thing.
Turning them out.
Yeah, you know, it seems that if you were speaking generally, which you can't really do, you know, about individuals, but if you were speaking generally, it seems that men do porn and women do romance novels. But then Playgirl came along, so I don't know how to put all that together.
And then there's, like I said, then there's the occasional guy who actually writes romance novels. In fact, there are actual guys who like romance novels. I don't know. Do you follow football?
I used to follow college football very closely with Florida State University here in my backyard, but then since the Bush administration thing, I mean, I don't need more. I mean, I find all this much more entertaining. You know, I've gotten to where, yeah.
This guy was famous quite a few years ago. There was a football player by the name of Dan Dierdorf. And he got real famous. Well, it turned out his brother, who is also a great big football type, he just didn't go that particular direction. It turns out he likes romance novels.
I'll be darned.
The wonders.
Well, I have to admit, at garage sales, you know, you'll often find a huge box of them if you go to a garage sale. And I have seen, you know, picked them up and thumbed through them, and some of that stuff's kind of hot. You know what I'm saying?
I could give you a list of authors where you have to pretty much open the pages with asbestos gloves on. They're that hot.
Yeah, somebody's always getting something ripped off their body, and you know, it's you know, it's harmless.
But, you know,
fun.
They're sheer. You know, it's basically just sheer. You know, puff fun.
Yeah.
It's not the great American novel, and none of these authors make any pretense of it. It's just...
Well, it's certainly fun. More healthy than ending up in a closet with two swimsuits and
and
an appliance. Yeah, an appliance inserted. Oh, my.
Oh,
and they call us
way,
crazy.
One of those romance novels that I told you about with the gay FBI hero.
Yeah.
She came up with him, that particular character, quite a few years ago, long before it became, quote, the in thing to have a gay character. She was just way ahead of the curve.
I'll be darned. That's interesting. I didn't realize there were any gay characters in those things.
Oh yeah, this guy he's anything but your stereotype, which is what I love about it. You know, classic stereotype of a gay man is somebody who swishes around leading with his wrist. God save me. This character is an FBI agent.
I kind of like
not
that.
Not exactly what I would call your average stereotype. And the whole thing has him, the whole book, none of him is stereotype. And
that'll
that was
be
what was so great about it.
Well, I just didn't know. What do you know? They're telling a little truth in some of those, then, were they not?
Yeah. And the only other fiction in, you know, as far as there was another gay character from, believe it or not, the science fantasy genre. Mercedes Lackey, about in the early 1980s, came out with a gay character. Of course,
you know,
the entire trilogy.
What was it called? Because I've read something, and I've been all for years. I've tried to remember the name of that, but it had a gay character. It was science fiction with a gay character.
Yes, it was called Magic's Promise, Magic's Price, and then there's one other, and I can't remember.
I've noticed that in science fiction. There was one I read
Mercedes
while back.
Francis, she came up with a really... the thing was, she spent the better part of the entire trilogy going on and on about how he couldn't get his father to accept the fact that he was gay.
I see. That's interesting. Everybody was addressing the issues,
yeah,
even in the novels.
Familiar.
Yeah, don't it, though? But, you know, there's no such thing as... See, you were actually a Christian with a Wiccan problem. I'm sorry.
I haven't been a Christian since I was 10 years old, and the Presbyterian church where my mother dragged me, the hellfire and brimstone preacher got up and in full rant mode forgot his lines. Stood there with his mouth open, his arms up, and nothing coming out, and I figured, well, hell, if he can't remember it, it's not worth bothering with.
I should say
so. I never
so.
Went back.
Well, you know, when you accept Jesus, that Wiccan problem will go away. I'm sorry, Susan. I just can't resist.
Oh, by the way, I'm glad you liked your little card.
Oh, that was fabulous. It came as such a surprise. In fact, I tried to send it. I thought it was so great, I tried to send it along to someone else, a DJ fellow, I got busy and I forgot to send it, but I thought it was priceless. It looked like Robin, like Batman and Robin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was kind of a muscle guy in a
Robin never
Halloween
looked that
car.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. Robin, you wish. Exactly. I appreciated that.
Well, you're more than welcome. You have a nice night, Peter.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you for calling. And I always enjoy talking to you. That's our friend Susan, who is a Wiccan, but really she's a Christian with a Wiccan problem. We have identified that. We're going to run this audio. As I said, I normally chop stuff up like this and do the segments, but it's such a good... such a good interview. I'm just going to run it complete. I'll go ahead and credit it. It's MSNBC clip, and it was Dan Abrams who's doing this. And at the end of it, he has Pat Robertson and Laura Flanders. But it's about the whole scandal with Curtis and the prostitute that he hired. You see, when it first happened, Curtis is telling the news and the police that the guy stole his wallet and was extorting money from him. And as it turns out, what really happened is he wouldn't pay the guy the $1,000 that he offered to pay him for sex. He would only give him $100. And Gabe, well, you'll hear the whole story. And it's really funny at the end. Well, before we run the video, we have Kate. Kate, welcome to the show. It's so good to hear from you.
Oh, no, I wanted to hear this before. I'm sure I would have had a few comments to make. I'm really interested in the who and the do. My God, that is wonderful. I'm going to just take that right out and run it until it falls over dead.
I thought it was good. He did a very good job of just sitting through all of that. The thing ran for, at least a week. It was in Phoenix. And you have to separate the who from the do. Now, see, you are not a lesbian. You are a heterosexual woman with a chainsaw problem.
That's right. That's what I've been trying to tell you. I just wanted to thank you for the good job that you did on the story before the earlier one, the very first one. I think was that in Ohio?
That was a, you know, God, Kate. Yes, it was in Ohio and Southern Ohio. And stories like that are so difficult to do. I've done others like that, and even though I've read them before and I know what I'm about to read, I can't get through those things. They're horrifying to me.
I know. That's why I'm just calling you to give you a big hug and say thank you. You did a really good job, and that news has to get out to people, and you're right. It doesn't get any press coverage outside of the area, and folks just don't know. I mean, they don't know, and it's got to stop. It's got to stop. But
yeah.
I just wanted to give you a big hug and say thank you for that. Was a really good story. And, I mean, you did a good job, and it's so draining, and I just appreciate what you do. I hope that you'll drink a great big old 12-ounce glass of water tonight and go to bed and rinse all the toxins out of your body, because that was, you must be really drained from that. I mean,
well,
your whole draining sometimes, and
it
I
is draining.
That.
It is
hard work, guy. You're doing a good job.
I'm just a regular guy with a
microphone
problem.
I just wanted
to
respond to the who. Got to separate the who from the do, or separate us, or I don't know. But it was fun in chat.
I'm glad. I'm glad.
You just give me an immense amount of pleasure there, boy. I gotta go. I want to hear the bit that you were gonna play. So run it, Bob. Thanks, Peter. I love you.
Okay. Good night, Kate. Thank you for calling. And again, as I said, he accused the fellow of stealing his wallet and blackmailing him for $1,000. Standard Republican, and you know, at one point he even said to the press anyway that he wished he'd just paid the guy. But it's just so Republican. They offer you $1,000, give you $100, and then tell everybody you stole it. It's a great little section, and you can't help but laugh at the Robertson. And Bob, if you would go ahead and run the clip called, I think I named it MSNBC Dan Abrams.
Another conservative Republican lawmaker announcing his resignation today after being exposed as both a homosexual and a hypocrite. On October 26th, Washington State Representative Richard Curtis, apparently dressed in red stockings and a black sequined lingerie top, and let's just say he wasn't on his way to a Halloween party. According to police reports, Curtis, who has voted against gay rights legislation, visited an erotic video store where he was seen receiving oral sex from an unidentified man inside a viewing booth. The report says he then invited another young man from the store back to his Spokane hotel, promising him $1,000 for sex. What followed, we really can't repeat on TV, let's just say involved lingerie, rope, and stethoscopes. They all made an appearance. All of this came to light after the conservative lawmaker apparently contacted police, claiming he was the victim of extortion by this man. Joining us now is Cody Castagna, the man who Representative Curtis allegedly paid to have sex with him, and his lawyer, David Partovi. Thanks very much for coming on the program. To both of you, appreciate it. All right, Cody, let me start with you. How did you realize that this guy that you had had sex with was actually a lawmaker?
That would be after he gave me his wallet.
Why did he give you his wallet?
Because he didn't have enough money to give me at that time, and so he gave me his wallet as collateral.
And he wasn't paying up the money he owed, and so you started going through his wallet?
No, he gave me he was tired, he didn't want to go down, and he didn't think that he could get that much money at that time in the morning, so he told me to hold on to his wallet until in the morning when he would be able to go and get the remainder of the money that he promised me.
And so it sounds like what he did is he ended up calling the police and claiming that you were trying to extort money from him, right?
Yeah.
And Mr. Partovi, let me ask you a quick question on that. I mean, you know, it sounds like the reason that this was all sort of came out into the open is because he called the authorities saying, someone's trying to extort money from me, and as a result, this whole investigation ensued, right?
I think that's absolutely correct. You know, his smart move would have been just to keep his promise, and I don't think the young man to my left, or to my right, I guess, wouldn't have made a big deal about it at all. He chose to take what is essentially consensual, simple misdemeanor-level conduct between two men and turn it into a violent Class B felony that carries an instantaneous 6-month sentence for my client with no prior felonies.
And has anyone been charged yet?
Nobody's been charged. I think that it's an unreasonable escalation, but you know, in this town, and the only reason that I'm really here, Dan, is because this young man hasn't been through anything like this before. I have, and unfortunately, I do expect a charge, even though the evidence I don't think supports one.
Against your client, yeah. Cody, are you surprised that this is an official, a politician who's voted against gay rights legislation?
That, you know, that blew my mind when I found that out. It didn't surprise me, though. I mean, but...
All right. Cody Castagna and David Partovi, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. The question, so what is going on with Republicans getting up, wrapped up in these sex scandals? You know, this is the latest incident. This comes after Senator Larry Craig and the infamous arrest during the sting in the bathroom. Back with us again, Air America's Laura Flanders and MSNBC's Pat Buchanan. Pat, you know, what do you make of this? I mean, are we being unfair by picking a local, you know, state official? But it does seem to me that this reflects a problem with Republican hypocrisy.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, look, obviously, I don't think there's hypocrisy involved. I don't know all the details other than what we heard. But quite clearly, if this state legislator resigned out of shame and gave up his office, what he's saying is, I've engaged in shameful misconduct. And that's consistent with the way he's voted. So I don't see the hypocrisy. I think he did do the right thing in resigning. But look, there must be 10 to 20,000 state legislatures, and 2 to 3% of society is homosexual. It is higher in politics and journalism, I will say that. So you've got 600
but
Pat, these guys.
Here's
Pat
the difference.
Really trying.
But here's the difference. And Laura, I'm going to let you get a crack at this one. But this is his voting record, all right? In 2005 and 2006, he voted against a bill granting civil rights protections to gays and lesbians. 2007, voted against a bill creating domestic partnerships for same-sex couples.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he should have resigned for.
That's my problem with this.
I think the evidence is in, Dan. There is no question, and I want every conservative Republican out there to think about it. The next time that you feel inclined to cast a vote against fairness, against equality, we will all know that you like sex with men and you're chicken, and it's the being chicken part that disqualifies you for office and should.
There's no hypocrisy. If a guy believes there is shameful, I mean, if a guy believes adultery is shameful and engages in it, he's a sinner.
He's
if
chicken.
He resigns, he does an honorable thing.
But he's a hypocrite,
he
too.
He didn't resign until he got found out.
Consistent.
Pat, listen, if we find out...
You are trying, Pat. It's not your job. Let it go, Pat. It's not your responsibility to bail these people out.
If we find out, Pat, if we find out that you've got an illegal nanny, all right, Pat, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to say, you know, Pat Buchanan, this is a guy that's been speaking out against all this immigration-related issues, and he's got an illegal nanny, right?
Well, that would be, you're right, that would be hypocritical because I would have one there for a long time. But, Dan, you got to realize that not all the homosexuals are in the Democratic Party.
Give it up.
No, I agree. Not about the party.
Not your job.
But, look, when you're preaching about how other people should live, you better be living on the straight and narrow.
We know exactly what those votes mean now. We sure do.
I got it, Robert. Laura Flanders and Pat Buchanan, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
There you have it. Ha, 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 ha. When it's a Republican, you get to laugh. Ha, 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 ha. And if it's a Democrat, or even if it's a Democrat with Monica Lewinsky, you get investigated for years. And your sex life put all over the... just can't begin to tell you. But anyway, that MSNBC clip summed it right up. I'll tell you what we're going to do. I think we have barely enough time. If not, Bob can fade it just in time for me to say goodnight to you. But there was a request from the chat room that I had better play Village People this week, and I can't think of a better cut to play than this version of YMCA. It's the Millennium Mix, and it's by the Almighty Remix people in England. I think you'll love this version of YMCA.
It's fun to stay at the YMCA. It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Young man, there's no need to feel down. Young man, young man.
And that is the almighty remix of YMCA, and that is the definitive millennium version. It would be very hard to improve on that. I enjoyed being with you guys this evening, and I sincerely hope that you enjoyed being with me also. It's nice to have a Just Us night, and, you know, when we have the callers and the news, and we're getting so famous, we have so many guests now. And God bless each and every one. I'm glad that they join us. But we have a few Just Us nights. I need to tell you that Joe will not be able to join us this evening. Nighttime Cup of Joe will be a rerun this evening. And if you would stop by the Head On Radio Network main page, headonradionetwork.com, and click on the PayPal button and kick in a few bucks, we would certainly appreciate it. It keeps the stream on and the lights running. And, I guess that wraps it up for the day after Halloween. So here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...